We want to say welcome back to the Heights Podcast. At Heights, our mission is to love and to lead all people to a new life with Christ. My name is Matt. I'm one of the pastors at Heights Baptist Church in Alvin, Texas, and we create content like this podcast so that we can help you to take your next step of faith on your faith journey. This season of the podcast, I've had the opportunity to just get to know some really interesting people that are part of our church, and today I would like to welcome as our podcast guest, Tracy Loy. Tracy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Matt.
I am so glad to have the chance to sit down with you here at Heights. Well, actually, let me not get ahead of myself. Why don't you just, before we talk about any specific things, just tell me a little bit about kind of how you came to know the Lord, and then tell me about kind of your history here at Heights.
I was a young married mother living on the same street as Helen and Russell Brown. So those that have been to Heights and been a member of Heights for a number of years are going to know Helen and Russell. They both passed away. I think I became their mission project.
Okay.
They kept inviting me, and I was Catholic. And I was not going to go to a Baptist church, but they saw the struggles we were having, my struggles in my marriage, my children. They knew I needed the Lord, and they determined. And I don't know, finally one day I came, and I sat on the back row. It's now the event center of the church. Sat on the back with Mr. and Mrs. Brown for weeks before I would move forward, gripping the pew ahead of me. And the week I went up, there were 17 of us along the front.
Oh, wow.
That had went up and profess the Lord. And it was Helen led me to the Lord on her couch in her living room, actually. So it's been 33 years, because my middle child was almost 2 when I became a member. So somewhere in that ballpark.
I've had conversations with people that have a Catholic background before, and they talk about sometimes it's very hard to become a part of a Baptist church if you have a background as a Catholic, especially because family is very uncomfortable with that.
Yes.
Did you experience things like that?
Very much so. If my grandmother had still been alive, I'll be honest, it wouldn't have happened because that would have been, my parents were very upset with me at the time. And it probably wouldn't have been as bad because I invited my sister and her husband. And when I brought them along, it made it even worse. My dad called me the Pope. And it was. It's Mike and Ginger Saladino. Do you know the Saladinos?
Mm-hmm, I sure do.
They're former Catholics also. So they gave me a lot of information. And it wasn't until I started reading the books that I had at my mother's house to actually study the doctrine that made me, when I studied both Christianity and Catholicism, that helped me to be here. But it was Mike and Ginger Saladino, Helen Russell Brown, then Mary Morrow, and many others through the years. I was raised up in a room with the pillars of the faith of this church. I mean, when you're in the room with Aunt Maud and Mama B, and oh my goodness, there's so many of the, those are who raised me. And so I had an advantage. I had a true advantage. I've been blessed beyond. But I was the only young person in the room. Mary Morrow was the closest, and I think she's 30 years older than me. And that's okay.
That is okay. Mm-hmm. Because one of the things I think that's important when we gather together as brothers and sisters in Christ is that we, those of us that have been walking with Jesus longer, have something to offer to younger people, younger generations. I think that's an important thing to remember. A lot of times, especially like when we're doing life groups and stuff, we tend to kind of age segregate, and there's nothing wrong with that, because people that are in certain age groups, they're they have common interests. Like a lot of the people that are in my life group on Sunday morning, they're in that age where they have teenagers, and they don't have little tinies anymore, and so they're sort of like, we're in the trenches, and we can there's advantages to walking with people that are in a similar life stage as you, but I think there's also advantages in connecting with people that are older and younger than you.
Yes. And that's what I love about now. But when I go back to when I started teaching, Sherry Easley, Charles's wife, Brother Charles, they started a ladies' class for me and one other woman. Because I was in the group, Phil Winget's class, Alan Larson's class, and there weren't very many single women. I was married, but my husband didn't come. And Sherry started a class for me, and I was the only one that showed up.
Oh, God. Well, wow.
And then 2 others showed up. And it wasn't long after that Sherry says, "Well, I'm not going to be teaching anymore." And I said, "Well, who's going to be teaching?" And she said, "You are."
Surprise.
And that's how I started teaching, just kind of thrown it in my lap. throwing it in my lap.
It's been very interesting for me to just kind of watch from afar, to watch the women's ministry, particularly the study that happens on Wednesday night, because you do have a very diverse group.
Yes.
You have a nice range of ages that are happening in your ladies group. But also you have like people that have been at Heights for a long time. Yes. You've got people that are just plugging in. Mm-hmm. And then you also have some people from the community from other churches.
That's right.
And so it's
11 regular attenders that are not of our church.
Yeah. That is so interesting to me. Tell me about the women's classes that you've been teaching.
I've taught for many years, but during COVID, when everything was shut down, there was a group of women that said, "We don't want to stop. What can we do?" So we met at the little rotunda at the high school, and we had our string so we could hold hands 6 feet apart. And we started praying and doing Bible study then, and that just kind of spurred it on. From then on, we've met every Wednesday, regardless, except for this last summer when I had surgery.
Gotcha.
But we started then. We started just going through the Bible. We went through the prophets. I've spent a year in Zechariah almost.
Oh, no kidding.
And the natural place to go from there was Revelation. Before we've taught the video-driven courses, we've done that. We do our small little intimate group. And then we break out and do the video driven. Mm-hmm. And I purposely hadn't said anything about the Revelation group because I thought it was going to be our small, little intimate group. Mm-hmm. And it got announced.
So you've had quite a crowd. So,
yes. You know, we have 60 ladies, I think, on the roll and 40 something. I mean, they keep scrolling, growing. Ladies that have come to the regular Wednesday night classes, the video driven before. I didn't think they would come back for just this, and they keep coming, and it's beautiful. And we're almost to the end. We could have spent a year in Revelation, Lisa.
Oh, easily.
Lisa said, "You need to stop, stopping point." So I am coming to a stop, but I'm still on Sunday morning. We're still going.
One of the things I've also noticed is that you've had several other ladies have an opportunity to share a testimony or to help teach also.
Yes. And that has been amazing. I have such a great team of women in there. They are just so beautiful. And when I asked them, I said, "Humor me," because when I asked them to begin with, we thought we're going to be in our little small group. And then when they found out we're going to be here, I had a couple said, "Oh, I can't do this." But for the most part, they all jumped right in. And it's just been amazing to sit back and watch them. And they're all so good, all so good. And then we break up into small groups, too. Because the group is so large, I want them to be able to talk. Mm-hmm. Because you know, when it's in a large group, if you're just up there talking, if you ask a question, they're all going to sit there and just kind of shrink down. So we break up into groups. And I pray over that every week and put them into different groups with different women. And I change it every week so that they're with a different group leader for the most part and different people until then pray, who needs to be together? What's going on in their lives to be together.
And you've got a diverse group because you've got women who are married. Mm-hmm. You've got women who are single. Mm-hmm. You've got women who have kids. You've got women who have kids who have grown.
Yes.
Like you just got a really diverse group that's happening there on Wednesdays.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you have the most amazing food of any other Bible study.
I keep inviting
hands down. You know, there's a lot of times I sort of just kind of make the rounds on Wednesday and I try and check in with the teenagers. And I try and check in with kidsmen real quick and touch base and see what's going on. And you consistently have much better food than whatever's going on in student ministry. I'm just saying. Actually, the student ministry is pretty fantastic too.
But yeah,
you've got some amazing cooks over there.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Are there any kind of unique challenges or unique things that you think about specifically when you're teaching the Bible to women or to ladies?
Well, we all come from different backgrounds. Mm-hmm. Especially on Wednesday nights, not everyone comes from a Baptist background either. And especially with Revelation, you know, nobody wants to touch Revelation. And there are many reasons why we have so many different opinions, but my whole thing, and I told them going in, this is not an end times class.
Right.
This is a revelation of Jesus Christ. And they all looked at me, okay. And I said, we're going to look at it as a love story.
Oh, I love it.
And they all looked at me funny too. Some of them were okay, and some of them were like, "How can you call this a love story?" I said, "Just wait. Just wait." And they're coming up to me now and they said, "Oh my gosh, I see it now. I see it now. Greater love. Greater love. It's amazing."
We sang this past Sunday.
You sang all Revelation, and yeah, I just closed my eyes.
Well, I was thinking we sang Revelation song, and we sang Holy on Sunday. Yeah. We weren't in the Book of Revelation. We were in Isaiah chapter 6, but that holy yes. was kind of a...
It all goes together.
Yeah. And when one of the ladies who's been a part of the study came up to me afterwards, and she's like, oh my gosh, like we were in the throne room. She was like, that's what I picture when we read the Book of Revelation. You know, all of us, you know, stretching throughout eternity, all the followers of Jesus just uniting their voice in praise. And oh man, I got chills. I'm getting chills again just thinking about it.
Like, and I had chills Sunday. I'm like, oh my gosh. And I looked at Carol after the song said, and the 24 elders and the four living creatures. They just, yes.
To me, that is such a healthy way to think about how we treat the Book of Revelation. Mm-hmm. You know, because a lot of times I think we can get kind of bogged down in the charts and graphs.
Yes.
You know, and we can kind of like get obsessed about headlines and kind of chasing, you know, I always feel like the picture of the guy, the meme with the guy with the map, with all of the yarn and the string everywhere. Yes. You know, sometimes I feel like when we approach the Book of Revelation, it can be kind of like that. And I love your description of how it's the revelation of Jesus. Yes. It's who he is, you know, and who he's calling his church to be. Like, oh, I just love that. What are some of, so you spent a lot of time in the prophets, you're doing Revelation right now. What are some of the other books that you've taught?
We've gone through prayer. We did Genesis a while back. We may go back to the beginning. I'd like to go through the feast.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to go see Jesus through the feast is where I want to go next.
Oh, I like it.
So.
Like the different feasts that are described throughout the Bible.
Yes.
And how they connect to Christ.
Christ,
oh,
yes.
Man.
Because we've done the tabernacle, and I'd like to go, you know, you want to, now that you're done Revelation, you want to go back to the tabernacle. You want to go back. It's like, let's go back, because you're going to see it in a whole different way now. You're going to see everything through a different lens now.
I'm thinking about maybe some folks that are listening that, maybe that we have some ladies that are kind of new to our church and they're thinking like, oh, how do I connect? How do I get to know people? You know, that's hard. You know, what would your encouragement to them be?
Just jump in. I know it's hard. One of the things that a lot of people don't realize about me is I am the most shy person. I am extremely shy.
I don't believe it.
And a lot of people say, that's what they're looking at. They say, I don't believe it. I was a kid that was starved to death rather than go up to the concession stand window. So don't. And I was the mom that once my kids got old enough to call the pizza guy, they ordered the pizza. That's horrible. It's horrible. It's all God, and I know it's hard, and I break them up into small groups, and I do that on purpose. I would never pressure anybody to pray. I would never pressure anybody. It's a good group, and all those ladies are going to love on you. Mm-hmm. Every lady in there is going to love on you, and you can jump in at any time. When we do a study, even if it's a book study, you can jump in at any time.
Just, you don't feel like you're lost.
Come on in. They're going to hug you. They're going to love you. You're going to be welcome.
And the food is amazing.
The food is amazing.
That's fantastic. You and I probably knew each other before I came to Heights, because before I came into Heights, I was working for another church in our same town. Yes. And so we interfaced a lot because your day job is as a funeral director. Yes. Tell me a little bit about that.
Oh, it's so funny. My dad and my uncle, and there's some other men that were the original owners. My dad built Oak Park Funeral Home.
Okay.
So as a teenager, I was mortified that we owned a funeral home. You know, that mom would look at the obituaries on the weekend. And God has a sense of humor, because I've worked with special needs children for many years. Mm-hmm. And the teachers are trying to loophole. That's when I got out of the school system. The day that I needed a job was day that I actually officiated a funeral. Brother Charles was sick. Well, no, Sherry, excuse me. Sherry was sick. Brother Charles was at the hospital with her. Ken was at seminary. And someone from our church, they weren't a member, but they were a friend, they needed a pastor to officiate. And I said, I can do it. I can do it. I officiated the funeral.
Wow.
And then a few weeks later, Brother Daryl from Alvin Missionary was in the hospital. Their associate pastor was at work, couldn't do it. I officiated a funeral. And they said, what do you do for a living? I said, I'm not working. They offered me a job. So I started working there. And a little bit later, the funeral director was gone and they were looking for someone. They said, well, why don't you go to school? The same day that I was going to sign paperwork to go to school, was the same day that Cam Marvel, do you know Cam?
Mm-hmm, yeah. I sure do.
Cam called me and said, I have a job opening. Do you want it? I threw my pen up in there. I said, okay, God, what do I do? And here I am, funeral director, and it's been 20-something years there. It's not a job. Mm-mm. It's a ministry, and I love it. So if I can be there to walk you through one of the toughest times and love on you and hopefully... I don't even know how to explain it. I don't want it to be, it's going to be tough, mm-hmm. but we're going to love you through it and we're going to walk you through it. And it's an honor. It's just a true honor.
It is. That's certainly how I've thought about it mm-hmm. as a pastor yes. who has the opportunity to be a part of that. But I tell yes. you, I'm so grateful for you and for some of the other, funeral professionals yes. that I've had the chance to work with yes. because y'all just do such a fantastic job of taking care of people. You know, and I think about it, and it, you know, depending on kind of like the makeup of your congregation, mm-hmm. you might do a lot of funerals or you might only do a few. Yes. You know, I'm an associate pastor, so usually, you know, lead as the majority of the funerals, and then I do a few, you yes. know, once in a while. But it's very hard work for me.
Yes.
And so sometimes I was having a conversation with one of the other guys in our town a couple of weeks ago, and I went because I had like one in the morning and one in the afternoon, mm-hmm. and for me that was a very busy Saturday.
Yes.
To have one and then yes. another, like boom, yes. boom, like that. But then I was talking to him about that. I was like, yeah, like oh man, I had one this morning, then I had one this afternoon, and then I looked at him. I'm like, oh, who am I talking to? But so that
come
made
sit
me,
with us for a little bit.
That made me think about, you know, this is a thing that mm-hmm. as a pastor, especially as like an associate pastor, this is a big deal for me. I, you know, this is a lot of time and energy and preparation and time invested in walking with a family through.
Yes.
But for you guys, it's just like, it's like all the time.
It's all the time. And your adrenaline can stay up here.
Oh man. How do you get through the day? How do you get through the week?
A lot of prayer. Everybody asks me, how do you do it? I say, a lot of prayer. A lot of prayer. And I have a good prayer team too. I have ladies that pray for me too. And they say, how do you do what you do? When I'm, and I'm not trying to jump into it a lot more, but when I'm getting somebody ready for you to see your loved one, mm-hmm. I'm praying that I hope that they see their loved one in this. Mm-hmm. And it hurts my heart when they don't, you know, when they can't, because that's your last time, mm-hmm. your last time. And then you go home and you're exhausted.
Yeah.
You go home and you're exhausted. You wake up and you do it again. But that's what we're called to. There have been times when I said, okay, God, I can't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. And then he always puts somebody right there in my pathway right away. You know, he said, no, you're not done yet.
One of the things not only are you walking with person through like a lot of grief, mm-hmm. But sometimes there can be a lot of strong feelings, hard feelings yes. amongst family members.
Oh, yes.
So sometimes you get, I mean, I don't like to trivialize the word I usually yeah. use is drama.
Drama.
There's a lot of, you know, there's you've got family members who are grieving. Mm-hmm. You've got them coming from different places. Now, sometimes, I mean, we're in a season right now at Heights where we have celebrated the lives of several individuals, and several of these individuals were like faithful brothers and sisters in Christ for years yes. and years and years, and went to be with Jesus, and it was beautiful.
Yes,
you know, it's still sad, but you know, still grief, but beautiful. Celebrating mm-hmm. the lives of faithful people, mm-hmm. but sometimes you know you've got families that are in very unhealthy situations, mm-hmm. and then there's a lot of tension in the room, like, and so you end up like almost having to play referee sometimes.
Yes, yes. And that's not our job. But you right. But you know, my thing is, I always say, we can do this for 2 hours. You can get along for 2 hours. We can do this.
That's a good word.
You know, 2 hours.
That's a good word.
I'm not going to sit by him. I'm not going to do that. You know, for 2 hours. Or the brothers that all had gotten in a fist fight the week before, you know, they're all my pallbearers, and I'm looking at them like, we're not doing this.
That's right.
We're not doing this. So, yes. Things like that happen all the time. And you have families that haven't even talked together in forever that are coming into a room. And a lot of, and you'll hear screaming, doors shut. But you just keep saying, okay, God, bring them back. Bring them back for 2 hours. We can do this. And some mend, and some we never know. Some we never know. It is. It's tough. Grief is a tough thing.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah, we had a grief ministry at Oak Park. We met once a month. and I'm at Palms now in mm-hmm. Angleton, but I'm so thankful that Carol does the comfort circle here now. Uh-huh. Try to send, you know, a lot of my people from over there aren't going to drive over here. It's far, but that's a good thing. Grief management is still important because people tend to think funeral's over, it's time to get back to work. No. A lot more emotions going on there.
I know one of the things that we talk about when we're trying to minister to people that are walking through a season mm-hmm. of grief, sometimes it's hard to know what to say or what to do. You know, so taking a step back from kind of what you do professionally, like mm-hmm. as brothers and sisters in Christ, like how are some ways that we can help be a support to our brothers and sisters when they're walking through a season of grief?
Somebody needs to just sit and listen. Sometimes they need just somebody to sit and cry with them. Mm-hmm. Listen, everybody has a story. Get them to talk about their loved one. I had an arrangement conference a few weeks ago that could have been done in 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. 2 hours later, we're sitting there. They're showing me pictures of their little boy. We're telling stories. The grandma, we're telling stories of their story. That's so important. Everybody has a story. Every life is a life worthy. We need to let them talk it. Because so many times it's bottled up inside because they're afraid. Mm-hmm. People are afraid to ask. Mm-hmm. And don't say. The sweet little girl, she said, "Miss Tracy, why does everybody keep petting on me?" So I always tell people when you go to a funeral and they're small children, don't pet them. Don't pet them. Because these poor little kids are, you know, when it's their grandparent or their parent or whatever, everybody comes up and tries to hug and pet. Don't pet the children. You know?
That's right.
So just love on the family. But we just got to let them talk. Hmm. Everybody just wants to talk. And that's the whole thing. That's what's good about Comfort Circle here, I know, because they have to have a time to talk. Mm-hmm. And it's usually the year mark and the 2 year mark mm-hmm. that we need to reach out to those families too. So that's something the church needs to really have it on the calendar. Mm-hmm. When did this person pass away? How can I reach out to them at this point?
That is a really, really good practical piece of advice. That's mm-hmm. actually something that our lead pastor does really well.
Good.
Is he writes important dates down on the calendar. Mm-hmm. And sometimes he'll encourage us. He'll be like, "Hey, so-and-so is coming up on 12 mm-hmm. months. You know, would you reach out?" Mm-hmm. And he helps remind the rest of us, let us know that those things are happening. Because that is important, because when an event first happens, there's lots and lots of things going on. And then after the service has happened, you know, everybody else goes back to their life. They go back to work, they mm-hmm. go back home, they go back to their routine. Mm-hmm. And you've got somebody whose world is still falling apart.
And they're alone. A lot of things too, a lot of times too, there's paperwork to be done. They get all this paperwork in, especially our elderly. They're a new widow or widower, and all the stuff is coming in the mail that they don't know what to do with. I'm like, just call me up, bring all your stuff, and let's sit down and go through it. Mm. They're lost. And, you know, a lot of men have never touched the bills or cooked, and vice versa. Yeah. You know, vice versa. So there needs to be somebody to help them.
Mm-hmm. Especially if you've got a life group, and if you've got a small group in your mm-hmm. church, like that's a really good opportunity for you to take care of, somebody who's going through grief.
But more and more so, the families that I take care of don't have a church home.
Oh. So not only are you the referee, but mm-hmm. you're also their pastor.
Yes.
You know, I mean,
in a manner of speaking. Yeah.
You're the one who has the opportunity to show Christ to them. Wow. So I know my wife and I have talked for years. And my wife has said over and over again, she's like, I don't know how people do this without mm-hmm. Jesus. As we walked through the process of losing her dad mm-hmm. and then just a couple of years ago, losing her mom, she just said, I don't know how people mm-hmm. do this without Jesus. I don't know how people do this without their church, but I definitely don't know how people do this without faith in Christ.
No, they're just lost. I mean, we go through that grief period anyway. Mm-hmm. We go through the stages that, you know, not always in the order that they document them down, but we go through those anyway. But those without Christ are just so lost in the midst of it. Hmm. And we need to give them some hope.
I love it.
And it's a fine line, because it at my job, you know, you can't just come out and say, but you know, God gives you the words in there.
One of the things I've always been one of the things I always love about having that honor of being a part of, yeah. Of a service is I have the opportunity to share the gospel, and it's a captive audience.
See? That's right. They can't go anywhere. They can't go anywhere.
You know, yes. And I was trained by a wonderful pastor who taught me how to ask the right questions and to make to kind of tailor my sermon or the service to the person. Yeah. So there's so you can see a little yes. bit of their personality and their family's personality yes. represented in their service. And I love that. I appreciate yes. that so very much. But I guarantee that if I have the honor mm-hmm. of preaching your funeral, mm-hmm. you're going to hear about the good news of Jesus. Yes. You're going to hear about the fact that, you know, Jesus came, yep. Jesus died, Jesus rose again, and we can all have eternal life in him. Like that's going to be part of it. You know, Pastor Lee does the same thing. Yes. Like there's going to be an opportunity for you to hear yes. the good news about Jesus. And that's something that is always exciting to me, mm-hmm. especially because, you know, when you have a service, there's a lot of people, you know, who are coming, who are going to be guests. There are a lot of people don't have a church home. And so those are fantastic opportunities just to share the love of Christ. You know, and of course you have to be careful.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you do it for a living.
Yeah.
Are there parts of what you do for a living that you really enjoy? I mean, I know it's got to be very emotionally hard and you're dealing with a lot of difficult things, but like, are there parts of it that you just really love and really enjoy?
I just enjoy, I know it sounds crazy, but I love just sitting down with the family. Uh-huh. I mean, just the time that I'm sitting with them or the time afterwards, especially my widowers, you know, that they're doing better when they quit coming by all the time.
Uh-huh.
You know, they'll come by just because they just have to talk. And little by little, it's the aftercare. I guess really the aftercare part of it. Because you see the healing coming about and you see the change and you know they're getting a little bit better. And that makes you feel good too. I don't know. I just love my job. I don't know what part of it. There's so many different stages. Now, like say, you know, back-to-back-to-back services are hard.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes, you know, it's quiet. And I can do my Bible study.
If you have people, maybe some of our audience who are thinking about making sure that they have a plan in place for, you know, when they go home to be with Jesus someday.
Yes.
Are there certain things that you would encourage them to take care of when it comes to arrangements? Are there certain conversations they should have with loved ones? Are there certain things that they should look into?
Yes. My daughter did a project for school 1 year and, well, they had to do a project. What could they do governmentally wise to help the people out? What's something, a plan? If you could put a plan in place, I said, you know what you need to do? We all have to have health insurance now. There needs to be, everyone should have some type of plan.
Mm-hmm.
Her professor laughed at her and mocked her in class. I said, okay, we're all going to get sick. We're going to go to the doctor, but we're also all going to die.
All of us.
And there's so many people that don't have a plan in place.
Mm-hmm.
We have paper, and every funeral home has paperwork that you can fill out and keep it on file. All your vital statistic information,
mm-hmm.
what your wishes are, because so many people die without their family knowing what in the world they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Get it taken care of. Have a folder. Give it to your kids. Give it to your brothers, whoever it may be. The biggest problem we have is families or people dying that don't have a next of kin.
Gotcha.
There's one simple form, the agent to control the disposition of remains, that needs to be in place that people don't even know about. If you have that in place, you have your wishes down, it's all good.
Gotcha. And that can be a huge gift
Your family. They need to know. If you want to do the funeral prearrangement, if you have life insurance, have something. Because
mm-hmm.
it's so hard. We have families coming in, especially kids. I mean, anyone in their 20s or 30s are kids to me.
Right.
You know, when they come in and they have no idea, they don't know even what their grandmother's maiden name is. I'm asking you all these questions.
Mm-hmm.
And they have no idea. Where was your mother? I don't know. Where's your father? I don't know. And if it's all written down somewhere, put it in a file someplace. Mm-hmm. Let them know where your passwords are. Nobody knows where that is.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that, and silly, but I didn't realize that the garbage didn't get picked up at my house after my husband died.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying, why didn't they pick up my garbage? Well, that was coming out of a credit card.
Oh, gotcha.
You know, little things. Know where your bills are being paid from.
Uh-huh.
Because I called them, why didn't you pick up my card? Well, this credit card is have all your stuff written down. Mm-hmm. Pictures, take pictures. That's sad too, but family, we get ready to do a video and they say, oh, we don't have any pictures. They didn't like their picture taken. Take their picture anyway. Take their picture anyway.
Yeah, and if you're one of those dads where mom does most of the photography in your family, make sure that you take some pictures and make sure mom gets in the picture every once in a while.
Yes, because that's when my dad died, I wanted a picture of him with every grandchild. That was hard. Uh-huh. That was hard. And then same thing with my mom. My mom always took the pictures. So now she's not in very many. So we started taking pictures with my mom again. you realize things. Yeah. And if I see some one of you know my dad at the time or my mom doing something special, I'm like, oh, take a picture because we're gonna use that for the video one day. but that's what.
It's a little bit morbid to think about it, but I really thought there was wisdom in what you said, which is the reality is that you know statistically speaking, unless Jesus comes that's back right. soon, 100% of us are going to die someday and are gonna meet Jesus. And so 100% of us, it would be wise for us to have a plan in place, have, mm-hmm. you know, some paperwork filled out, have a file folder somewhere. You know, mm-hmm. and maybe have had a conversation with our loved ones, have it written down, but also have a conversation with our loved ones about.
Nobody wants to talk about it. Yeah. Nobody wants to talk about it. That's the hardest thing. Or they say, well, I was going to talk to them. I was going to. Mm-hmm. We just never got that opportunity.
Yeah.
Take the time. Ask the hard questions. Give them some ownership. I had one sweet girl who had cancer, and she came in multiple times to me. She was in her 20s. She had everything. We had it all done. Her obituary written out. She had pictures of herself taken, how she wanted me to do her makeup.
Oh, wow.
I mean, we did it all. She had ownership. You can have ownership mm-hmm. and what it's going to be like for your service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a gift. That's a gift to your loved ones.
It is.
Because it's going when the time comes for you to go meet Jesus, mm-hmm. it's going to be a very difficult, stressful, emotional time for them. And mm-hmm. so if you've got a file folder with you know some paperwork filled out with a plan mm-hmm. in place, that helps answer some of those questions that they have, like, oh, how am I supposed to mm-hmm. you know. And so I see some huge wisdom in that. Also makes me realize that I probably have some homework I need to do.
Yes you do
But wow, so Tracy, thank you so much for spending this time talking with me.
I always enjoy talking to you.
Oh, I love our little impromptu conversations on Wednesday while we're trying to make sure that the microphones are working. Yes. But I have appreciated, just kind of from afar, but I've appreciated watching you teach and interact with the ladies and encourage the ladies of our church for so long. And I've also really appreciated having the opportunity to work with you in a professional capacity through saying goodbye to loved ones and doing services. And so I just really enjoy the fact that we got to kind of get a little peek behind the curtain at some of the amazing ministry that you do, not only as a Bible teacher here at Heights, but also as what you do when you're taking care of families as a part of your job. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I want to say thank you so much to our audience for listening today. And want to let you know that at Heights, our mission is to love and to lead all people to a new life with Christ. We worship every Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. We've got a campus on the south side of the Houston area metroplex. And so we'd love to see you. We have life groups for all ages at 9 a.m., worship service at 10:30 a.m. And you can also check us out. We stream to Facebook and YouTube every week. And if you've got more questions about what it means to be a part of Heights Baptist Church, you can go to heightschurch.org. We'll see you next time.